You are listening to Miller and Moulton, exclusively on the Florida Sports Network. And now, here's Mark Miller and David Moulton.
Top of the 8 o'clock hour, and on a hump day, that means Seth Everett. Sports with Friends, Hall of Justice, his two terrific podcasts. He's got others. They're not so terrific. They're not so successful. We don't mention them. Sports with Friends, Hall of Justice. Follow him on X. It's Seth underscore Everett. Seth underscore Everett. By the way, very nice of you as you join us live on Twitch so we can see you. You're driving. We know that because we can see you in the car. It was very nice of you to type Seth Everett in car.
In car.
That was very nice of you to do that.
I just wanted something different.
But being very safe, he's pulled over to the side of the road to do this interview as per the law wherever you are.
Jersey, I can't believe you don't break the law to do this segment. Just keep driving. You got the phone. Just keep driving. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Because they really encourage holding your phone while you're driving.
You're not holding it. You've got it lodged there.
Oh, okay. There you go. How's that?
And for those not joining us on Twitch, Seth now has the phone pointed directly up into the sky. Okay, fine. All right. We're lawbreakers on this show, though. We just, we want it to be a renegade segment. But anyway, fine. Hey, yo, we were impressed with your tweet. Okay. Hockey playoffs without a team in it has its benefits. I am engrossed in these incredible games with little to no stress. Look at that.
How great was game one, Colorado-Winnipeg? Last night with the overtime, with the two goalies, Florida and Tampa, just standing all over each other. That was incredible. The Carolina comeback. Carolina came back against the Islanders, but about eight or 9 years ago, they did the same exact thing to my team. And it was heart-wrenching, and it took me months to recover. But with this, I was just like, wow, how about that? And I remember saying in my house, nobody else listening, but I said, boy, it really must hurt to be an Islander fan today. That's fun to say.
And Seth, it is. It's little moments like that because I took the end of the season very hard. I'm a Red Wing fan. It's the first year that my team's had a sniff, and it went right to game 82 with exhilaration and heartbreak all 30 seconds apart.
On an empty net goal.
But it did not take long. And I'm right there with you for these playoffs to start. Maybe one game and probably that first period. I'm all into the Tampa Bay and Florida series down here. But it took about one period of that series to forget about my anguish from my team and jump full on into these playoffs. And thus far, as you said, they've delivered.
And they always say, hockey people say all the time that it becomes a war of attrition and that the best quality hockey – the best quality games are the first round. And it couldn't be for it's so accurate. It is such a fun week that everything I want to know who's playing tonight. What time are the games? I am so in for this thing and I can't get over it. And the ESPN app, and I criticize ESPN all the time, but the ESPN app with the picture in picture. So I had the overtime of Tampa, Florida, and I put Colorado, Winnipeg in the top left, top right corner of my screen. Oh, my God, I was in hockey heaven.
Seth Everett, Sports with Friends, Hall of Justice. Follow him on X at Seth underscore Everett, Seth underscore Everett. Ladies and gentlemen, full disclosure, on Monday, middle of the afternoon, Miller and Moulton were verbally accosted via a text from Seth Everett, who basically said, listen, you yahoos, I know exactly what I want to talk about. You better remember this and bring it up Wednesday morning, not this crap that you guys want to talk about. Got it? So, okay, Seth.
That wasn't exactly the tone.
Mark, how did you take the text?
I found it ironic, Seth, because we bring you on the show for you to talk about what you want to talk about, and you scolded us to tell us what you wanted to talk about 2 days later.
Well, I've said repeatedly, this was my mindset when I sent those angry texts. My mindset was, what I try to do when I have some, you know, work to take care of that's not recording or anything like that, I try to have a baseball game on if a team I'm remotely interested in is playing. So Sunday, I saw that Colorado was hosting Seattle. And the night before, it was 31 degrees in a 7-0 Seattle road victory. And I said, oh my God, I think the people there are miserable. So I love Coors Field. I think it's a gorgeous, just scenic place. So I put the game on. And it is just 0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0. And then it goes to extra innings, and I forgot about it because I'm not engrossed in this game like I was in Florida-Tampa last night. And that stupid ghost runner comes on, and I forgot about it. I wasn't even thinking about it. And that's when they get a seeing eye single, and next thing you know, they score runs. And I said, oh, my God, this is so boring. And then the next day, Oakland, the Yankees, and I was late. I had other things to do because I'm not just sitting around watching TV. So I did miss the Aaron Boone ejection live. I did see it on Twitter 7,000 times, but I didn't see it live. And it's 0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0-0- I don't have a firsthand knowledge of the NBA playoffs, but I've heard they've been interesting. I know other sports. I watched the Premier League the other day. That was gripping. I was transfixed on my screen. This sport, I don't know what it is, but I am not watching this. This is not better. Well, it's faster, but it's not better.
Well, and that is interesting. There's no doubt it's faster. It's even faster this year. They've shaved 2-3 minutes off of what they did last year so far. 240 were the games last year. They're in the mid to high 230s right now. And clearly, that's what baseball wants to do. But also, when we talked about this, Seth, the Yankees got off to the best start in franchise history. This is the Yankees. You know, yeah, it's great that the Cleveland Guardians are 17-6. 43 people nationally care. The Yankees got off to their best start, and the Yankees weren't being talked about nationally on sports radio. Okay.
Baseball, or on Sports Center, or really on anything.
I mean, baseball is now, but like, we're big college football fans. You only root for Syracuse. You pay attention, but that's all you root for. And Miller and Moulton over the years have chastised national talk radio for not talking enough college football, especially considering the ratings and what have you. I think baseball nationally generates less talk now than even college football does.
Well, I know for a fact that program directors are telling their hosts to talk less baseball. And I live in New York, where baseball is a hub. I mean, baseball's an absolute hub.
Yeah.
And the travails of Pete Alonso.
In New York, baseball's number one over football year-round, by the way, year-round.
Right. And the Yankees are not a big deal. The Aaron Boone thing was talked about a lot. I mean, that I heard from a lot of people. But unbelievable the way this game has just changed. And I'm not sitting here trying to pick problems with it. But it has to be extremes. It's either, you know, feast or famine with the swinging and the missing, or it gets even worse. It's just boring.
Well, and Seth, I don't hate to agree with you, but when you sent the text, I'm like, oh yeah, that's the MLB Network game that I get on streaming.
Oh,
so
it was?
So I can watch it. So I put it on, and Seth, I wanted to send you this text going, oh, didn't you see this? And
nothing.
Until the top of the ninth, there was nothing.
And there have been a lot of shutouts this year, and that's not just the White Sox who have been shut out 8 times in their first, 20-plus games. But, there were 2 shutouts again last night. You know, it's
– there are 3 teams hitting under 200.
And the Astros starting first baseman's hitting less than 100, by the way. And I love the fact that they say they don't know what to do. How about play somebody else? Just an idea. It's got to be so. Right, come on, less than 100. I mean, come on now. Shouldn't have to dig too far in the organization. Find somebody who can do that. Sports.
But your Yankee point is. Oh, your Yankee point is well taken, because what is the good story? And I can't. I can't. I loved having Phil Nevin and John Smoltz and Jim Duquette on the podcast, but there's nothing about this season. The storylines I want to talk about are all in other sports.
But I will say, what Juan Soto's doing is incredible in New York. The start they're having, the way he's playing, it is a story, Seth.
Yeah, it is. It is. He was up in the order. He came up. The best part about that game was Ryan Rucco, because I'm a huge Ryan Rucco supporter. That was it.
Sports with Friends, Hall of Justice, go.
Sports with Friends. I have a gentleman by the name of Keith Dawkins. He is the CEO of the Harlem Globetrotters. Yep. The Harlem Globetrotters are doing a big rebrand, and this guy has all kinds of ideas on how to incorporate streaming and social media to make the Harlem Globetrotters maybe not what they were, but relevant again. And in case Spotify's listening, I do play 25 seconds of the old Harlem Globetrotters theme song. And Hall of Justice is a review of Justice League Crisis on Infinite Earths Part 2 with the writer Jim Creek.
There you have it. And now Seth can hang up the phone and get back on the road and get to Syracuse by 11:30. He's Seth Everett, Sports with Friends, Hall of Justice. By the way, does baseball come up in your classrooms at all? Do the kids talk baseball at all?
No. But I would love to do a segment on the very, very cool podcast that they all created. They really were very, very interesting and compelling. I can't wait to listen to them.
Okay. Sports with Friends, Hall of Justice, Seth Everett. Follow him on X at Seth_Everett. All right, safe driving, buddy.
See you guys. Bye.
Seth Everett joining us in his car. He pointed that out on Twitch.
In car,
Seth Everett. It's like NASCAR, Mark. Our show is like NASCAR with our in-car cameras.
Except for our in-car cameras not moving.
Right. Very boring.
Right. It's like life in the pits. When your car's dead.
Very boring.
Right. The Miller and Moulton car is stuck in the pits. We're just going lap after lap down. Correct. Mm-hmm. Miller and Moulton. J.P. Shadrick, part of the Jags Radio Network. He will join us in 25 minutes here on the very boring Stuck in the Pits, Miller and Moulton.
You're listening to Miller and Moulton, only on the Florida Sports Network. And now, here's Mark Miller and David Moulton.
21 minutes past the hour. J.P. Shadrick, Jags Radio Network, also play-by-play, PGA Tour Live, and Westwood One, college and pro football. Very talented. He will join us in about 15 minutes. We're engrossed in a few things on this show, and we've got two poll questions today. Not one, but two. And once again, one is sports and one is non-sports. So, Mark, which one's the more popular of the two?
Well, neither I would call that popular, but certainly the choice of milk for your cereal is getting far more votes than where will Minnesota draft their quarterback.
See, once again, I don't know why we continue to talk sports. Apparently, nobody gives a damn.
They do. They just don't want to vote on it. And when we limit it to a Vikings quarterback draft, that doesn't have a lot of meat on the bone to them. But it's the whole draft to us.
Right. But apparently it's just us. So, okay. So what were the milk choices again? Did you get soy, almond, you know, what do we get?
So I put the skim, the 1-2% all in one category, because essentially that's just all watered down milk.
It's white water.
It really is. Then whole milk gets its own classification. Almond milk gets its own classification. And then the others, your soy, your oat, and all the other damn things, chocolate for that matter, would qualify in the other. I don't know who puts chocolate milk on their cereal, and I don't know if that's a bad thing or not. Because I'm now thinking of like the Cocoa Puffs.
Yeah.
With chocolate milk would probably be delicious. And who am I to say that's a bad thing?
Whatever floats your boat. Whatever floats
so
your
that's
cereal.
That's our poll question. That Mark Miller, the David Moulton, Miller underscore Moulton on X. Vote accordingly.
David, do you like chocolate milk?
Yes. I can't remember the last time I had it, though.
Okay.
But I used to drink it a lot as a kid.
It was a treat.
I mean, it was.
You know, Trent, back in the 70s, when I was going to school, every once in a while, you know, when they expanded and you could get the chocolate milk in the little awful container, it was a breakthrough in elementary school education of the likes that we had not seen, because corporal punishment was still a big part of elementary schools in the public schools at that time. Your teacher could hit you without repercussions from anyone.
Sometimes at the encouragement of the parents.
Correct.
I mean, so things have really changed. Right. Mark, I don't know about your school district, but in mine, chocolate milk was a nickel more than, you know.
I thought it was only a penny more, but I could be wrong. For some reason, I thought it was just, it may have been a nickel more.
It was a nickel more, and I remember, you know, I had exact change for the lunch, and when I decided, ooh, I want to start getting chocolate milk, I had to get an extra nickel from my mother, and my mother would say, why? And when I told her, she said, drink the white stuff.
As Deadstroke says in the Twitch chat room, my principal had a huge paddle hanging on his back wall. So did mine. And it was a woman, Mrs. Eater. If you got called to the principal's office, over her head was a paddle with holes in it. Just to let you know what might happen to you.
Ah, the good old days, Trent.
But if you're smart, right, didn't they let you pick which paddle you wanted and you picked the one without holes?
No, they didn't let you pick.
Okay.
Let you pick which paddle to get beaten with?
I've heard stories. I don't know.
What? This isn't. These schools were not a benevolent dictatorship, Trent. They were dictatorships.
You had no rights.
As Paul says, when I got whipped in elementary school, I never said a word to my parents. Hell no. And I'm the same way. I only got hit in school one time, second grade. My teacher did not send me to the principal. My dog followed me to school. And the dog was running around the playground. And the principal made an announcement. Does anybody know whose dog that is? It was mine. So the teacher said, take the dog. I walked to school. The teacher said, take the dog home. I took the dog home, and I went, I'm home.
I'm not coming back.
Why should I go back to school? Watched a couple shows on TV, went across the street to Doug Gillis' house, who had a great glass backboard in his driveway, and I was shooting hoop. That's when the school called Mrs. Gillis, because that was the emergency parent in case they couldn't get a hold of mine. And she walked out and said, the school just called me. You need to go back to school, or I'm going to tell your parents. I went back to school, and Mrs. Crocker spanked me. If I had to tell my mother and father why the teacher hit me, then I had to confess for missing 3 hours of school. And you know what was going to happen? I was going to get hit again.
Made no sense to us as kids. Why would we tell our parents?
Hell
why we
no.
Got spanked? Then they would see like, well, you deserved it. And come to think of it, I think I should spank you too.
Where's the belt?
I'll tell you what, my generation would not last 5 seconds.
No!
In the 80s or the 70s.
My mother used to spank me in the kitchen. I never understood why until one day she was spanking me with the wooden spoon and she hit me so hard the spoon broke in half and just flew up into the air in pieces. And without missing a beat, she reached over. Okay, pulled out the drawer, grabbed the spatula, and kept whooping me.
Spatula could hurt.
You
could get some torque on that thing.
Oh, yeah. No. Go back to the wooden spoon.
Yeah, right. That wooden spoon's just it's more of a tap hit than that spatula. You can get some torque on that sucker.
And so that's when I realized, this is why I get beaten in the kitchen.
And that's not a plastic spatula. It's a metal spatula. Don't kid yourself.
Right.
There were no plastic utensils back then,
And I used to laugh. I used to say, well, man, I'm getting beat by the pancake flipper. My mom doesn't make pancakes. I think she has this here just to beat me with.
Got another text. My elementary school principal had a paddle over the door. It had on it spanking machine.
Straightforward. No.
We probably should be hit by our teachers because we neglected the play of the day, David.
Yes, Trent should have spanked us last hour. We took his segment and we just talked right through it. We're too busy talking about soy and oat milk as opposed to the play of the day. the heck were we thinking?
Hey, when you guys get on a roll, I am not going to just muck it up. And, hey, by the way, because if I did, I'd get the voice from David.
Well, also, and I mean, you've already been fired after voting for Zach Wilson. I mean, it's not like you can step in. We've stopped listening to you. Every time you've talked for the last 2 days, it's wah, 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 wah.
I got fired twice yesterday. Sorry.
With that being said, try to keep your job with a good play of the day. It's our Molly made play of the day. What do you have for us, Trent?
So, you know, I'm not the biggest hockey guy in the world, but apparently a behind-the-back save and a tie game in the Stanley Cup playoffs is a BFD, as you guys would say. Panthers, Lightning, 2-2, second period. Sergei Bobrovsky makes your play of the day.
This into the Panthers zone, has a man trailing in, let a shot go wide off the inboard, put up on Stamkos, back and what a save, Bobrovsky! Bobrovsky with the trapper to deny Dumba, the defenseman who was open in front with a yawning Cage. Sergei Bobrovsky displaying acrobatics to keep this game tied at 2.
Displaying acrobatics. Doug Plagan's on the call there. The energy is undeniable, and it's 2-0 Panthers in the series, but guys, we're packing this thing up and we're going to Tampa. So we might just be, this might be just the beginning, baby. Who knows?
All the pressure on the Lightning now as they had a great opportunity to even that series last night with some great chances. Bobrovsky was terrific. Vasilevsky was unbelievable. And in overtime, the Panthers get the win.
Most career playoff overtime goals. Joe Sakic, 8. Maurice Rocket Richard, 6. And then there is a list of players at 5. 2 of them Hall of Famers. Patrick Kane will be. Glenn Anderson's in the Hall of Fame, isn't he?
Yes.
Corey Perry and Carter Verhaeghe, who scored the overtime winner last night. He's already got 5. Panthers have won 11 consecutive overtime games in the playoffs. 11 in a row. And the Lightning have lost 6 straight. Both streaks are amazing.
For different reasons.
Yes.
And Verhaeghe with that overtime goal, the patience he showed in front of the net to wait and wait and wait for that net to pop open and then roof the backhander. Unbelievable. We will switch gears from pucks to pigskin. JP Shadrick to talk the Jags next.
You're listening to Miller and Moulton, only on the Florida Sports Network.
22 minutes before the hour. Back to talking draft. One of our favorites, JP Shadrick, Jags Radio Network, play-by-play, Westwood One, college and pro football. He's even doing, is it PGA Tour Live? What's the golf stuff you do?
No, it's PGA Tour Entertainment, and it's the enhanced international feed. So the feed we do is the TV you see, but they have live golf during the commercial breaks for all the international partners. They offer it as a package to all the international TV partners.
Basically. Do you work in an accent?
No, because there would be 200 different accents. That would be difficult.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. Fair enough.
So it's fun.
Right off the bat, Moulton trying to get you to blow your gig by using an accent.
No, come on.
I mean, come on. I mean, you know, you just give it a mighty thrash. I mean, come on, JP, work that in next time. Scheffler with a mighty thrash.
I know what I am and I know what I'm not. And I'm not that.
JP Shadrick joining us. Follow him on X at JP Shadrick. Very fancy Twitter handle. It's his name.
Well, what are the Jags going into this draft, JP? Obviously, they need a receiver. You know, they could use a little help on defense. So what are the Jags heading into the draft?
The Jags are a 9-win football team. I mean, they've done it 2 different ways the last 2 years. Comeback fashion 2 seasons ago, wild comebacks, and they kind of bet on that being consistent enough. And then last year they were in first place and 8-3 and collapsed. They had some injuries. But they're a team that feels like they're right there on the edge of doing that again. And a few, you know, injuries away and the ball bouncing the right way from being a 12-win team, a division champion again. So that's where they are. This is the time to go get it. They've got the quarterback still in the rookie deal. Okay, well, you got to build some things around him. It will be a rebuilt defense or a changed defense, not fully rebuilt. That's too strong. But there's a new coordinator, and how that will look and feel will be interesting to see. And they've done a lot of work in free agency, bringing in some veteran guys that can play right away. Eric Armstead on the defensive line, Mitch Morse at center, because there was a little bit of a deficiency in strength there last year. So Morse will come in, couple-year deal. So, you know, they've worked on some key pieces in free agency. Now, okay, they've got a couple parts they can go get in the draft that maybe they can help them right away, but they can also build a little bit for the future because there are some big deals coming up.
Two-part question here. The first one is about the Jags. Are they as good as they were when the season ended, better or worse on paper, but also in relationship to the Texans? You know, they finished the year with, and I know they don't feel they're worse off than the Texans. I know they feel they're better than the Texans, but the Texans beat them in the standings. They won the division. They won a playoff game. So you look at what the moves the Texans have made also. They've made some nice moves, including the big one with Diggs. So I'm curious, where do you think the Jags feel they are in relationship to 3 months ago with themselves and with the division?
It's a great question because you better keep up quick. The way they've built some things on the offense down there. That's why on defense there were so many changes. It was just kind of it felt lost at times on defense last year. And so they changed the coordinator. They got rid of a couple of the secondary players. They brought in a couple of free agent guys to play in the secondary. Ronald Darby's a 10-year player at corner. Savage at safety. They've got Cisco back there. They've got Antonio Johnson, who's a young player who can go back and play safety and likely will there. They've got some depth on the back end of the secondary. But to chase down these receivers, you're going to have to either – there's two options, right? You can either play great defense and try to keep up with them and, you know, draft another corner and do all that, or try to outscore them. So I think there's a balance there. They feel like on offense they have a team that can go out and roll the ball out and play right now, the Jaguars, that is, with some veteran receivers. I don't think they necessarily feel like they need to have a number one receiver. They can have a group of three twos and a tight end and Evan Engram. And that's a pretty good foursome to go out and run with. On defense, though, the way they want to play defense, it sounds like, you're going to need some physical big cornerbacks. Bump and run, you're at the line, it's physical. You got to be able to run and keep up with these receivers down the field. So for me, I think that's what's left. Corner, you got to play defense against some of these possible high-scoring offenses in the AFC South.
Well, you know, it was a year ago when we were talking, JP, and we were talking about the Jags outscoring everybody. It didn't work that way. You know, can they get 30 points a game and be better than the Chiefs were a year ago? And it was realistic with the personnel that they had in the year that they were coming off of. But is that a realistic way to win in the NFL?
Outscoring people?
I mean, outscoring them in the way we were talking about, 30-plus points, which seems, you know, it almost seems unrealistic.
Well, I mean, the you can have the best plans in the world and then you know, things happen, right? I mean, they were not on track to do this anyway before the injuries, right? That was part of the issue. They had some offensive line deficiencies. You could tell that they, you know, Trevor didn't have a lot of time. Sometimes the interior of the line was a little bit of a turnstile. Left guard was changing. The right guard is just a veteran player and they extended him out a little bit, so he's still going to be around. But the center was getting pushed back a lot. They had a lot of moves up front. I think that affected just the confidence of the quarterback sometimes. And then you lose Christian Kirk with five to go. He was the key to the whole thing. I mean, he's the way the offense works. Everything goes through Kirk and Evan Engram. And Evan Engram was out there and had a great career year. But with Christian unable to balance it out on the other side, then all of a sudden – the defense can focus on one or two guys and that's it. And it was over. So other injuries started to happen and it just was a spiral downhill. Can they get to 30 a game? They're always going to say that. I think that's what they feel like they can be, especially with a fortified offensive line. Okay, Trevor, you're going to have, you know, a second and a half more. What can you do with it with a healthy wide receiver core?
You mentioned Trevor Lawrence. And living in Jacksonville now with you, I understand how
you're not living with me. You're living near me. Yes.
Okay.
Glad that you made that distinction, JP,
I meant in the city of Jacksonville. I'm living in Jacksonville, comma, with you, comma.
Thank you.
And I understand how big he is. But it's funny, nationally, people are kind of like, I don't even know if he's the answer. It's very interesting, the perception locally versus the perception nationally. And just curious, Trevor went sideways last year. Didn't go forward, didn't go back, but he went sideways. How big of a year is this for Trevor, if you know what I mean? He was supposed to go forward last year, where he was going to be mentioned as one of the top 6-7 quarterbacks in the league. Now he's kind of in the Dak Prescott category.
Well, I can tell you they're already talking about an extension. So obviously the GM has said that in his press conference last week. The quarterback said that last week in his press conference before that their sides had already been talking, because after year three, you can start negotiating the extension and the number's only going to go up. So the sooner, in theory, the better. Okay. Does that get done this offseason? Maybe. I mean, there's a chance. They've got to figure out the fifth-year option by, what, May 2nd is coming up. I'm sure they'll take that. If they don't get the deal done before that, that's fine. ETN as well. He was a first-round pick that year. It is a huge year for him. Deal or no deal, it's a big year for him, because he has to bounce back and prove that he is that top-tier, top-five quarterback that everybody thinks he might be, and I think he feels it's in him as well. Let's see that. When he's put into a corner and he's backed up, a lot of times we've seen some good things out of him. And this might be a bigger picture corner he's backed up into. But I think he has something to prove coming out this year, the way things melted down last year. That drives pretty much everybody on this team, I think, both sides of the ball. And they don't want to see that happen again. That they did that to another team 2 years ago, walked them down, did the whole deal. And then they got to taste their own medicine. So there is some motivation there to step up and play bigger and better here in 2024. I'm curious if this gets done, if it gets done before the season. If not, then they won't. The GM historically has not negotiated during the season. So I think the next few months will be key. And it seems like things are trending the right way, at least. And once you get that done, then it sets up your finances for the next 5 years.
I can't really see them trading up without the ton of draft capital they have, but can you see Jacksonville trading out of the spot they're at 17 if someone wants to go get it to give them a little more capital in this draft?
Yeah, trading up's tough in this spot, especially. Last year they had 12 draft picks, right? A lot of them were later, and they actually picked 13 players because they traded back twice, got an extra pick, traded up again, the whole thing. He's not scared to trade back. He's done that historically in San Francisco. Trent Baalke has the GM, and here in Jacksonville. So, if, let's say, for example, there's a corner or two that they like and all of a sudden they're gone somehow, do they move it back and get an extra pick here or there and still get a corner they like, or just change position groups and stay? I think those are all in play. Like I said, it's tough. You don't know after the top 10 what's going to happen. Let's say, okay, the first three are going to be quarterbacks. That's pretty much standard thought. What if McCarthy goes up there all of a sudden at the quarterback, somewhere in the top 10? And then what if all of a sudden there's a run on quarterbacks and Penix is in the mix and somebody throws one out for him? And then does Nix get up there too at that point? Is he that talented? If there's a run on one position like that, it's going to push some of these guys back. And there might be a player at 17 or at 14 or 15 that you might not have expected. Then, okay, you're moving three spots instead of 10 spots.
Well, JP,
that's a much different conversation.
Like, I think if the Jags are hell-bent on getting one of the top two corners, Quinyon Mitchell of Toledo or Terrion Arnold of Alabama, I think one of them will be there at 17. I do. You take a look at who's ahead of them and what they need. Mm-hmm. Maybe the Raiders at 13 would take Mitchell from Toledo, but I don't know if anybody takes a corner before Jacksonville. But what you just mentioned is an edge rusher could fall to Jacksonville, where all of a sudden, whether it's Verse or Latu, and they go, yeah, we got to get our corner in the second round. I got to take the pass rush.
It's a fantastic thought, because that's how some of these great defenses over the last 20 years are built. Yeah, they have two starting edge rushers in Josh Allen and Trayvon Walker, and Walker can move inside and do all that, and they've got options there. If you bring in another guy who can start and play right away like that at that level, all right, now you're talking. And then you're bringing guys in waves. You got package options. There's a whole different animal. And that would help the secondary tremendously, right? If you get a little more pass rush up front. Now, you ask certain cornerbacks, a guy named Ramsey, he would think the other way. No, the corners help the pass rush. He told us that before. That's a little different. In my opinion, obviously, it's the pass rush that helps everything. And if one of those guys is there, I think it's in play. I don't think they're stuck to corner. That's what I'm saying. They did enough in free agency at corner. They can go out there now and play. Could they be better? Maybe. But they're in a spot where they can pretty much draft the best guy that's there.
You know, I'm not the worst roommate in the world, just so you know. Okay, I kind of do my own thing. I leave you alone. I pay the bills on time. I mean, you spoke as if the thought of us sharing a condo was literally you would, like, take your own life first. I mean, just so you know, it wouldn't be awful.
It wouldn't be great. I'm doing just fine like I am. This setup's okay.
And I consider him a friend, one of my two friends in Jacksonville.
Well, you might obviously be down. You might be down to one, David.
Golly. Oh, JP Shadrick. He really is a nice guy.
Really?
At least he was. Westwood One play-by-play, college and pro football, Jags Radio Network, golf in 200 countries. And not in need of a roommate, by the way, just in case you were wondering. JP, thanks.
Thanks, boys. Have a good day.
You too.
Oh, boy. I really do consider him a friend. Okay. I mean, I think we've gotten together twice in 2 years. So, you know, for me, that's a social life.
Well, like any good friend, he was unbelievably honest with you about the question you asked. That's what you ask for out of a friend, is honesty above all else.
Boy, I'll tell you, he Heisman'd me, didn't he? Man, I mean, in fact, like with Shaq-like arms, I mean, he Heisman'd me.
It was more Bo running over Bosworth to me than it was Heisman'd. I think you got freight trained right there.
He cut you off mid-sentence. He was like, you don't live with me.
And JP's running through the tunnel right now after just scoring a touchdown.
I feel like Bill Bates and he's Herschel. I really do. Miller and Moulton. Thanks for listening. MillerandMoulton.com.